You and your degenerate friends already waste enough time thinking about disc golf. But just in case, here's some extra material on the Fish Golf Broadcast. I am very pleased to welcome back Raven Klein.
Hello.
One of our early guests to the Fish Golf Broadcast, back for kind of a different type of episode. Usually I try to interview a guest, get some of their thoughts as a conversation. But I asked for some questions on Instagram and Twitter, not knowing exactly what I was going to get. And you're welcome to always submit questions to my accounts, although I am studiously not trying to make this a question and answer based podcast all the time. But Raven, what you thinking about?
Oh, well, I just had some really, really good ice cream. So I'm pretty much still thinking about that.
And digesting.
Yeah. And trying to think like, oh, do I still make the same amount of food for dinner? Or do I have to like a little less now?
Yeah, for sure. This is the difficult part of adulthood where you have the freedom to make choices like ice cream for dinner or ice cream for most of dinner.
It's true.
But should you?
Yes. My thing is like, if dessert is offered, you should probably eat that first, because what if something happens and you don't make it through dinner, like an asteroid or something, and you die? At least you had dessert.
That's very fatalistic, and I feel like I've seen that on the kind of towels or napkins that are adjacent to normalizing alcoholism.
Ooh, okay. I don't want it to be on the same level as that.
Well, like, life's uncertain, eat dessert first, or it's wine time o'clock or something.
That's true. I guess I don't really drink, so I never really equate my dessert things with that. But it is the same.
Well, ice cream,
both indulgences.
Ice cream, I think, is a fair vice. And with that in mind, our first question is going to come from a local loudmouth. I will not name him. Why do you hate root beer floats? And I want to get this out of the way. I'm going to just go straight forward here and say I don't hate root beer floats, and I will not accept that narrative.
I don't think you should accept that narrative. Just because you don't want to go get a root beer float doesn't mean you hate them.
Right. This person was clearly trying to put words in my mouth, slander my character.
Which he's known for.
Yeah,
he
again.
He or she is known
this
for.
This person... Ugh. Root beer floats are fine.
They are. They're fine. I don't crave them. They've never been something that I'm like, wow, you know what I'm really dying for? Root beer float. On the topic of ice cream, I was the kid who always just asked for the cup of ice cream on root beer float day and just didn't get root beer.
Sure. I think if you're paying for a root beer float when you go out, you're getting fleeced. Like, make that shit at home.
It's kind of silly. I did do that in college. We had like an ice cream machine in the cafeteria, mm-hmm. and I would do that like a couple times. You could just go get a cup, fill it up with the ice cream, and then I added root beer to it. And I didn't even want a root beer float, but I was like, I can make that myself.
Right. I have the growing horror of realizing there's a repressed memory for me of the same thing.
Yeah.
In a college dining hall, soft serve machine, and got root beer. And yep. I drank most of it, and then that was on like a Thursday evening or Friday morning or something.
Oh, you remember specifically.
Yeah. Well, I specifically remember because I went away to an ultimate tournament and I left the Nalgene that I had filled up with a fucking liter of root beer float unwashed. So empty of like real stuff, but definitely some residue in the bottom. And when I came back...
Did you at least like it was not pretty, breathe in when you opened it?
It was pretty stanky. And okay. I opened it up and was like, oh God, I got to do something about this. Okay. So filled it up with hot water and bleach, about a 10% bleach solution, and was shaking it up periodically. Just kind of like left it by my desk and would shake it because I didn't have a good scrub brush. I was going to find one. I was going to buy one, but in the meantime. And I was studying. And I had a water bottle on one side of my desk, and I had this bleach bottle on the other. Oh, yeah, you're putting it together.
Oh, no.
And, like, I was thirsty, and I just, like, had two gulps of bleach water before I realized what I was doing.
Oh, no.
And that's the time a root beer float nearly sent me to poison control.
So honestly, even if you did hate them, which you don't,
you
could at least have a reason.
Yeah, like the, there.
Because that was a, you know, means to.
It's not. It's a shitty superhero or supervillain origin story.
It is. I've heard better. see, it wasn't bleach, thank goodness, but I did that while studying in college, except what I drank was hot sauce.
Yo, tell me about that.
Well, I love Frank's Red Hot hot sauce, and so I was having a snack where I just put that on, like, chips, just tortilla chips, and that was next to my water bottle, and this is in, like, finals week. You've been up for probably 36 hours.
Yeah. And you're not a real person.
You're not a person. It's like 3 a.m. and I just grabbed the bottle, and the base of one of those large bottles of Frank's is about the width of a water bottle. And my brain didn't put together that the mouth was different or any of that. And I just took a sip of hot sauce and then like set it down and was just very like, oh, okay. And then I took another sip because it was pretty good.
All right, so our future disc golf hot ones contestant is Raven Klein.
I like hot sauce. I mean, I feel like the hot sauce stuff though, people go crazy with it, and I don't want something where I can't taste it, and people are just like, oh, I can't. My eyes are bleeding, my nose is crying, like it's so spicy. I think that's so silly.
Do you think that there's a kind of a curve of ages or experiential ages where people are desperate to show that they're capable of handling hot stuff?
Yeah, I think I see a lot of people like they just want to prove it. And I'm like, I have nothing to prove because things sometimes are too spicy for me. I can handle heat, but I just want like flavorful heat. And then I stop.
Okay.
And that's it.
That's responsible. And are you impressed by people who show off how tough they are?
No, not in the slightest. Because even the people who can handle it, they still, like, their eyes still tear up. And then if they don't wash their hands and then they touch something, like, it's still a bad scenario. And so I kind of sarcastically am like, good for you. And that's it. But I'm not impressed by it at all.
Our next topic is going to be less serious. What has been the most valuable mental game trait for you on tour? Do you think this is the same for most pros, or will it differ from person to person?
So one of the things I started doing is I was very reactionary to my shots. And one of my friends always says, we don't like throw good shots to have fun. We have fun and throw good shots. And so that was how I started. It was easy for me. But then I started to get away from that, and I started getting really frustrated. And if I threw something wrong, even if it turned out well, I was mad that I missed my line. So it was all these reactionary things. And one of the things I found that helped had to do more with like OBs and blind shots, because you would throw and I treat it as Schrodinger's disc. So if you can't see the disc, don't react, because it is both in and out until you get to see where that disc landed. And it can be OBs or just, is it on the fairway? Is it off the fairway? Things like that. So because there's a shot of that adrenaline either way. So you either think it's in, and then when it's out, you're bummed. Or if you walk up there grumpy because you think it's out the whole time, when you get up there and you find that it's in, now you have to switch your mindset, and that is a whole other set of things you have to do. And then if you mess up the next shot, you're like, wow, I blew it. Even though the whole time it could have just been one shot that was fine, and then another shot that was fine.
Yeah, it's almost like you're playing out conditionals all the time.
All the time. And I've done that, and it's exhausting.
For sure. And this is a cousin to throwing a shot and saying, oh, I think that's parked, or I'm inside the circle.
If you say, oh, that's parked, and you get up there and you have like a 28-foot putt or a 30-foot putt.
That's the longest 28 in the world.
It is so far. And on the flip side of it too, if you throw a shot and you're like, oh, that was such a crappy upshot and I left it so far. And then you get up there and it's like 15 feet and you're like, oh, well, like that's fine. But now you spent the 5 minutes walking up there thinking you threw a bad shot, and it's so not worth it. So it doesn't work every time. I get carried away, but Schrodinger's disc, it both is and isn't until you see it.
Do you think that this is another kind of meta game that other pros are playing?
I think some people might have variations of it. I don't know if anyone would call it Schrodinger's disc, but I think people who have strong mental games don't get hung up. So in a sense, I think that people might approach it the same way, but it probably has nuances for each player.
Cool. I'm on board with that. And I may kind of adapt and steal that for myself.
Go for it. I think with a lot of things that people do on tour, you want as many people to figure it out as they can. And I don't think that's the kind of thing I have to like hide or anything, because someone can know about it. It doesn't mean they're going to do it. It doesn't mean they're going to execute it or not react or do all these things. So it's like, I don't know. I say share it. I say everyone work on your mental game, because if everyone is in a good headspace, we can see whose skills are actually there.
For sure. For sure. I think my answer to this question would be, when I was still playing mostly regionally and occasionally diving off onto tour stops, I felt like I was seeing so many players that I had never heard of who were rated 25 points lower than me, who were shooting really hot rounds all the time. Mm-hmm. And the way I conceptualized it was, they had like, their game is not much, but they believe in it totally. And yeah. I think that is a huge thing to compete on tour, because there are what, 6 or 7 players in both MPO and FPO that everyone agrees has top flight stuff.
Yeah.
Like, their talent is better than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is kind of scrapping along and doing the best they can, or they've got, you know, a couple really good tools that they can just pound into everything. Mm-hmm. And you can either broaden your talents and try to develop a forehand or increase your putting range, or you can deepen your talents and just become otherworldly at a couple things. And it doesn't matter how you do that. You just have to believe in the process and believe that every time you throw a shot, you are putting your best effort out there.
Yeah. I feel like maybe a year ago or something like that, I think Chris Clemens posted or was talking to somebody about that, where he's like, you know, I'm known for this one shot, and everyone else always works on things they're bad at. He's like, I work on the stuff that I am best at. So I feel like he's on that deepening of a skill process, whereas other people are like, well, I need to learn this new skill. For me, that was forehand. And I was like, don't get me wrong, I still want to be really solid at my backhands, but I kind of needed a forehand in this game, this field, to really be successful.
Yeah, the talent pool is deep enough now that you have to have baseline skills at just about everything.
Yeah.
In order to, you know, in order to have a credible tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one big thing that I have tried to do on tour is just increase the belief in what I'm doing. And usually that manifests in developing a game plan that is not, it doesn't have a whole lot of branches on it. Like, if it's headwind, I'm going to throw the backhand. If it's tailwind, I'm going to throw the forehand. Mm. But not having 4 or 5 different disc options within those subsets. Within each.
Yeah, that's very smart. Sometimes I think it's easier to play in the wind because, well, one, if people don't like wind, I like to like the opposite of people. So when people don't like playing in the wind or they don't like playing in the rain, I'm like excited to play in the wind and excited to play in the rain. But for me, I feel like windy days make the game easier for me because my choice is already made. If it's a calm day, there's infinite lines with all of my discs and different shapes. But when it's windy, I'm like, nope, I'm throwing this one shot because that's what will fight the wind.
The easiest option I can.
Exactly. When it decides for me. I think with some of that mental stuff too, and I've noticed it in myself and I've tried to stop it, but there's this difference, and it kind of has to do with the believing in yourself part, is if you're one of those players who's very aware of like what your card mates are doing and how, maybe not what their score is, but you can tell, you know, oh, these two people on my card are shooting hot. This one's around where I am. And you notice like, oh, everyone got a birdie except for me, or all these different things. And you start to play not to lose instead of playing to win. And that is a huge, huge like switch that I think people can flip to have a better mental attitude, or that like tenacity of like, no, I'm going to win. I believe in myself, not just, oh, I can't lose another stroke to so-and-so.
For sure. And in most cases, at least at the pro level, our fields are so deep that your card doesn't fucking matter. Like, there are There are at least 12 other FPO cards out there. There are at least 20 other MPO cards out there.
Yeah.
Like,
and
okay.
You get hyper-focused on your three other people.
Yeah.
And then it turns out you're all in the middle. Just, or at the bottom.
I'm Jessica Weiss, and I'm listening to the Fish Golf Broadcast while I drink my coffee.
I'm Double G, and I listen to the Fish Golf Broadcast while I marinate my beef.
If you like where this show is headed, stick around for part two. We'll never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads to start the show. So please support the Fish Golf Broadcast by visiting discgolfbra.com for hats and other apparel. Fish stamp discs are available at fishdiscgolf.com and daddydiscgolf.com, and you can save 10% on upperparkdiscgolf.com with the code Andrew10 on backpacks and other items. And now, more lies and outrageous claims from our guest, met with calm reason by Fish. All right, on our second half, I'm going to start off with something that I think is similar to the previous question, but more relevant to your playing experience in performance, not just the mental side. What is the biggest breakthrough that allowed you to consistently perform at a high level?
That's an interesting question for me because I don't know if I've had my breakthrough yet. I feel like, I started in 2020. I'm figuring it all out, but I hopped into a high level very quickly. So I feel like even my first couple Elite Series, and even last year, the full year on tour, I was still felt like I was playing catch up to a lot of people, even though I expected a lot out of myself and was like, yep, I'm going to finish top 20. That's a lot harder to do than just saying you're going to. And I've had that conversation with family members and friends, and we're just still kind of waiting almost for that breakout tournament or that breakout round or whatever it is. And I don't know if I've found it to figure out what that consistency is going to look like for me. And I would say that my play has become more consistent. And if you were to compare it to last year, it's, oodles better. But now it's still like, I still shot under my rating, even though it's 30 points higher than the last time I played this event. Because those expectations keep growing.
Sure.
But that consistency still isn't, it's not consistent. It's not there.
Yeah, that's definitely tough thing to manage, feeling like, you might be on the verge of something or your skills are better than they've ever been, but your play hasn't quite caught up to that.
I've explained that to people a couple times where I'm like, I can see that my game is so much better. My shot choice, my shot shaping, my execution of shots, but I'm still not scoring. So it's like, my game is better, but that doesn't necessarily mean that my scorecard is better. So I might have executed a hole and all of my shots were better than they were the last time I played it, but I got the same score.
Yeah, and that can definitely happen on, let's say there's a distance par four. Mm-hmm. You're not the furthest thrower in the division. The hole's not really designed for you.
Yeah.
So if previously you threw two shots that were 100 feet short of the pin, you're not scoring.
Yeah, it's like the difference of just getting a par versus now I'm having looks for birdie,
right?
But they're edge of circle.
Exactly.
It's that kind of thing. Uh-huh. So it's huge differences, same score. And that can be hard to motivate yourself with when you're like, I feel like I'm playing so well and I'm in the same spot. So I feel like I am more consistent. It's just not breakthrough consistent.
Yeah. Well, keep working.
I am. That's
I think for me, this is a very off-course thing. So I quit my job last July. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And now I play disc golf. I'm a professional athlete. Single quotes or quotes around both words individually. And the first event I played was D-Glow. And then I think I played the next 4 or 5 weeks in a row.
You started on Toboggan?
Yeah. I mean, I had played there before.
Still.
I had played a couple other things earlier in the year. But basically, I quit my job and I was working on my house all the time. I was working 40 hours a week and then working for another 40 on my house. I was barely practicing. And I had this expectation that, like, all right, I'm going to be able to go play. And I don't think I was mentally prepared for it. And I never caught up all of last year. I was just a bundle of nerves on the first tee of every tournament. I would make two or three mistakes around that. They were mistakes before I even threw the disc, because I was thinking about all the possible bad outcomes, or thinking about my shot selection, or, you know, something stupid like that. And it wasn't until later in the year that I realized just how much pressure I was putting on myself to try to play perfect at every tournament, instead of just like relaxing, trusting that I was putting in the right level of work and that the results would come. This year, I scheduled myself pretty well, but I made a bad mistake by playing an A tier in Arizona between Jonesboro and OTB Open. So I had played
That's a tough one with that long a travel.
Yeah, exactly. And I had a fine time in Flagstaff. I liked being there, but I had played the previous 4 or 5 weekends, then I played the next 4 or 5 weekends. By the time I played 10 events in a row with a lot of driving in between, I was just gassed. Like, yeah. I didn't have any resilience. So I think something that I have had to learn is listening to what my body and mind want at any given time. And sometimes that means like taking a 0 day, not even going to the course and putting. But if I loaf around on the couch, all of the nerves just come right back, because I'm not occupying my brain doing something. If I'm taking a 0 day or taking an afternoon off or recovering after driving, you know, a full day, I absolutely need to engage my mind by reading or doing puzzles or something that isn't just scrolling Instagram.
Yeah.
Cause if I do that,
which happens.
Yeah. It's kind of hard not to. We as disc golfers have a lot of unstructured time, and figuring out how to use that in a way that's constructive while not being, you know, totally taxing. You can't go to Planet Fitness for 16 hours a day.
Yeah. I never called them 0 days, but I like that concept, or that name for it. The concept, I feel like everyone has their version of it. And a lot of times on my 0 days, it's actually still me working, but because I do graphic design, I'm drawing. So maybe an hour or two of it can be not stressful, but a little more taxing, because I'm trying to create a design, trying to come up with something. But once I get to start drawing, I find coffee shops or things like that, and I could be there for 5-6 hours. And that's kind of what I would do on my 0 days, where I'm not putting or doing anything like that. But I also can't do that too many times, because when I draw, I get kind of hunched over. So my body isn't really relaxing. And I usually have to stretch and possibly go to Planet Fitness after those days, because I've been in like one position for 5 hours. And it's one of those things where you look up and you're like, what day is it? Yeah. One of my 0 days, I was actually with Ella and we were in Austin, and we went to Austin Boulder Project. But because you pay for a day pass, we were like, well, might as well be here all day. So we climbed for like 2 or 3 hours. Then we took a break and she had her laptop and I was drawing, and we worked for like 3 hours. Then we weightlifted because they had a gym, and like Planet Fitnesses don't have squat racks. They just have the Smith machine. And we were like, oh my gosh, squat racks. So then we lifted, and then we did like an evening yoga session. Great day, but we needed a 0 day the next day, because we were just like, we may have overdone it. And we thought it was going to be like a relaxing yoga class. It was not. It was like a very intense, like we were shaking kind of yoga class, which was good, but not for the day. So, yeah.
What do you consider as you develop and craft your broadcast voice? What don't you think people notice that goes into speaking over a round of disc golf?
I think I have a great broadcast voice.
No notes.
No notes. I don't even know how to answer that. I had someone once tell me that they liked my voice for this kind of stuff, and I didn't know if they were trying to diss me, like the way people are like, oh, you have a face for radio. like that kind of thing. Because the person who said it, it could have been. Yeah, I don't know. I try not to talk too fast, but I'm a fast talker. So if I can be aware of it and slow down, I think that's my best way to make the voice better.
Sure. And previously on the Fish Golf broadcast, we had discussed the possibility of you doing commentary.
Yeah.
Because of your excellent little V voice.
It's true. Yeah. I damn it. I think we talked about that on the last one, the vocal cords. Mm-hmm. It worked out for me.
For my part, most of my commentary work has been for Gatekeeper Media, and I and Nathan Queen are covering the MPO Chase Card at Elite Series events, as well as a few other things like nice. Regional A-tiers and the Swedish Disc Golf Pro Tour.
Sweet.
And I think what I have tried to prepare myself by talking to the players that I'm covering, because if I just say what I see on screen or speculate, it's not real. It's me inserting myself or projecting what I think they're doing. But if I can ask them, how are you preparing for this course? Did you change anything between rounds? Did the conditions affect your gameplay? Then I have a better understanding of what they might be thinking as they step up to hole 16's tee.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's something that we have a long way to go, and it's difficult to do for players who are both playing and doing commentary, because it extends my day considerably, and sometimes I'm not able to talk to those players just because of when I play.
Yeah.
Or a lot of those players don't want to talk, and there's not really an obligation that the DGPT is enforcing with tour cards. So some of them, you know, kind of give short answers and are wanting to get out of there, and they don't care what I say on coverage. I think that's another place where the disc golf media ecosystem and the disc golf playing ecosystem are going to have to mesh better, so that player availability is an expectation, but there are boundaries set around it.
Yeah, I think that's a very important aspect of that, because there's a lot that could be gained from getting player insight and things like that, but making it required by possible like fine or penalty or something like that really constricts pros, like I don't want to say emotion or anything, but just
I think their agency, like,
it's tough.
All of us are making our own logistical choices each week. We know when we tee, the Pro Tour sets that. But all of us are also setting up our own Airbnbs or lodging or, you know, dinner with friends or whatever other stuff. So I feel like it's almost an imposition for a lot of players to have to do media time or other things that are not strictly their play.
Yeah.
Because we already have kind of a lot on our plate on those playing days.
Yeah, it's very interesting to think about that, because you constantly, while you're on tour, have this battle between the fact that you're like, well, I'm really only busy for 4 hours of the day on competition day. And so you're like, wow, look at all this free time I have. But at the same time, you feel like you're busy all the time. And it's very strange, because people are like, oh, it must be great out there while you're doing stuff. And you're like, well, I wish I knew why I was so tired, even though we have 12 hours off, like in between your two rounds. But it still feels way more exhausting than that. And, you know, people just see like, oh, well, you have a round and then you have all this free time. You don't have to do anything. But then in the same week, like you said, like maybe you have dinner with friends, maybe your team is getting together and you've got like a sponsorship dinner or like a team thing like that. Or maybe it's someone's birthday and they're like, hey, we're going to go to this place. Or you couldn't find an Airbnb or camping place that's close, so you have 45 minutes of driving there and back one day. And it's just all these little things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of pros, not all, but a lot, like even the days we play, we'll try and make time to go to the gym, because you can't just not go to the gym 5 days a week because you had a round.
Right.
Like that really doesn't work.
Or if you want to go see some of your friends play in MPO.
Oh, heaven forbid you have friends on tour like and you want to support them.
That's 6 hours later. I have not been able to watch any FPO rounds this year because, like, every time I do Gatekeeper media coverage, I'm up until 1.
Yeah.
Like, am I going to get up at 7 a.m. to drive to the course and watch? And yeah. then dink around for 4 hours before my round? I'm sorry. I can't do that, Hal.
Yeah.
No, what is it? Shit. I fucking misquoted it. I tried. This is what happens after you or when you podcast after playing.
See, I was just going to say that this weekend of, you know, we're playing in A tier and I was the second card to tee off today. So I got to the course by like 7:30. I teed off at 8:12. I left the course when you left the course because both of my roommates are in the same tournament. So I was at 8:12. One of them was at 10:30. And then Alex was on chase card at 2:48. So I finished my round, changed, hopped on my scooter, caught up with Tony, who was on like hole 7, finished his entire round, grabbed a snack, and then went out and did the course again for the entirety of that chase card round. The whole time, just on my feet, like doing that. And I still have to play tomorrow morning, but it's like, I want to support those people. And it's a choice I made. I didn't have to. But, you know, if you have a couple friends, maybe keep the circle small. But then also the whole day, I've been checking KC Wide Open to see how people are doing. I've been watching the tournament in Sweden. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you got to almost cut off your friend circle at a certain point because it's exhausting. Just, you know, phone's dead because you're checking U-Risk all day. PDGA Live, you're seeing. And then in this tournament, I mean, I've got like 20 people that I'm checking scores for to see how they did.
Yeah, for sure. Now, this is not a woe is me, our lives are so hard. We are
astonishingly fortunate. It's just one of those, like, it's just kind of crazy to think about when you're like, why am I so tired today? Like, why are my knees swollen? Like, oh, because you've been standing for 10 hours. And I know people do that for work also. I'm just saying, you like, don't think about it.
Right. we're going to close with one last question about the word intent. I used this in an Instagram post a few weeks ago, and somebody asked if I would clarify what I mean by intent. And the context in which I used it was that I noticed a significant improvement in my play when I practiced and prepared with intent. So I'm sure you've gone to the course to a practice round or something, and you've played, and you threw your shots, and you threw your putts, and then you came off and felt like, fuck, I didn't learn a damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
You probably didn't play with intent that day.
Correct.
But if you go there with a clear idea about what you're trying to do with that practice round, maybe it's learning your shots, or maybe it's adjusting to the wind, or maybe it's thinking about the safest places to land if you're trying to get a particular score, or maybe it's just trying a new shot. Like trying the hardest thing you can on that hole that day.
Yeah, intent makes a huge difference. I've noticed I started doing something this year where the first time I play a course, you know, you'll throw one or two shots on every hole, but then I have a note on my phone and I'll write down what I think my play is. And the next round, I don't think about it at all. I just look at my list and I go, okay, this is the shot I'm throwing. So I take out all the, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's this, maybe it's this. I do that all on the first day. Second day, my intent is to follow the list. And I do every shot. If it works, I'll like make a note of it. If it doesn't work, I think about the shot and I go, okay, was it the shot's fault or did I not execute? Like, what was the error in that choice?
And sometimes something can work and you still realize it's the wrong play.
Yes. And I've done that too. And sometimes that's, you have other people play with you and they just go, oh, is that what you were trying to do? Or did you notice this? And you might not have. And you go, oh my gosh, that's the shot. Like it was right in front of me and it's not how I look at it. And I think we all approach the course differently because you see your strengths. You see your discs, you see whatever it is. And sometimes other people will just be like, well, throw that same disc, but throw, you know, just change your angle and like the shot's totally different. And you're like, yep, never even crossed my mind for that to be the right option. And like you said, sometimes it is the right option, not because you got further up on the fairway, not because you whatever. Maybe it's now your second shot is easier. you know, something like that, or a safer landing zone, or your room for error is smaller, or something like that. But it's, yeah, intent makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. And we're speaking of this in the context of practice rounds, but the same is true for field work or a putting session or going to the gym or like whatever it is you do. If you don't just kind of rip it, if you think about what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, and what you want to get out of it, I think everything can become more direct and valuable.
I always think about it for putting. That's something I tell people all the time. I'm like, if you can have I always say focused versus intent, but it's the same concept. And I say, if you can focused putt for 15, 20 minutes, you're going to get more out of it than someone who might just be going through the motion for 40 minutes or an hour. Because sometimes I'll see people like, oh, I putt for 2 hours. And I'm like,
how much of that was
But
that
how
work?
Much of it were you really focused like on every putt? And so, yeah, intent, that focus, and like knowing exactly what you're trying to do is so much more valuable than just repetitions. Like, I hate the phrase practice makes perfect, because if you are practicing like shit, you're not gonna be perfect. You're just practicing shitty. So it's perfect practice makes better.
All right. Well, once again, this is not going to be our format all the time, but I enjoyed having Raven on here. If you want to tell her how great her broadcast voice is, where can folks reach you?
Can I try that again?
I'm not cutting a damn thing.
Oh, no. Oh, I just tripped. You ever trip over your own mouth? You can find me on Instagram at rkline55, and that's really where I post the most stuff. Check out my reels. I try and put effort into them. And that's it.
Any discs to support you?
Yes, my tour series disc just dropped on July 6th. You can find it at the Dynamic Disc website and possibly at some of your local stores. It's the Lucid Ice Chameleon Convict, and it's awesome. I'm so happy with it. I'm giddy. I really am. I didn't know I was going to love it that much.
She's levitating out of her chair
right now. It's crazy. No, I love it so much. One, it's one of my favorite stamps, and I do all my own artwork. So this one made me really happy because it has a raven and sunflowers on it. And then it's been such a great addition to the bag because you can flip it up and really push your distance before it hyzers out. It's a 9-speed, but it's great. I love it. Get one.
Excellent. And if you want to tell me how great this show is and just how crummy the guest was, like, you weren't my first option. Taylor Swift was, but you were a close second.
She's busy. How could that?
She doesn't know anything about disc golf. Like, I don't know how we would have addressed these questions.
No. I think you made the right choice by having me.
You can reach me on Instagram and Twitter at fish58320. Well, Raven, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
That's all for this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast. But be sure to check out previous episodes and subscribe wherever fine podcasts are sold. Check out Fish Golf Broadcast hats and other apparel at discgolfbra.com. And badger your friends until they listen too. Join us next time as I goad yet another guest into starting a fight with another touring player, campsite host, or toll booth attendant on the Fish Golf Broadcast.